Hello, everybody, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor New Zealand Season 2, Episode 2. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about what I thought was another really great episode of Survivor New Zealand. I don't think I'm being biased just because I'm podcasting about it. Like, I genuinely think this is some quality Survivor that we're watching. To talk about such a great episode, I had to bring in an amazing guest. He was a definite fan favorite, a principal strategist of this season, and an all-round robbed goddess of Australian Survivor Season 2. Please welcome the great AK. AK, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Shannon, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm very good. I'll take that robbed goddess title any day of the week.
Yeah, I don't think that anyone would disagree. I mean, you were screwed by a swap and some twists, and I think that robbed goddess is a gender-neutral trend. That's my, that's what I think about it.
Well, I'll happily wear it with honor.
AK, we last spoke to you in, I think, was it last July or August or September, right around when you went tragically too early from the game, and Nick did a very extensive exit interview with you. But what have you been up to since then?
Yeah, I'm just doing the same old. I'm DJing weddings every weekend, running my own business. It's pretty fun. I've just recently taken a new position in a non-for-profit organization where I'm essentially overseeing a handful of kitchens that supply meals to the elderly residents in their communities. So it's busy and it's back to reality, and I'm actually really enjoying it.
Wow, that's very commendable. But I think that you're bearing the lead. I mean, are you not right now on the island for Survivor Australia Season 3 and talking to us from there?
I am talking to you from Fiji. I think it's already been out now that I will be a champion. So No, I am not in Fiji. I'm in lovely Adelaide, and you will not be seeing me on your TV screens this year.
Well, that's a shame. I'd like to believe everything that I read online, and I was so touched that you were keeping up with Survivor New Zealand while playing Survivor and still coming on to talk to us. I was like, what an incredible amount of effort.
I know, and that's what I do for the Survivor community.
Yeah, now knowing that you're not actually out there, I'm a little bit disappointed, but it's still really good to talk to you.
Definitely. And I'm excited by this season of New Zealand. I'm loving what we're seeing so far. So let's get into it.
Yeah, so you're liking the season. Who in particular, what players are you liking? And I guess more importantly, not liking?
Is that more importantly?
To me it is.
Well, I'm very cautious of how I go about talking about other seasons of Survivor. I know it's tough being out there and living it, and hearing people talk about what you did and why you didn't do things as a player, you sort of listen and go, shut up, you weren't even there. Mm-hmm. But I guess all we can do is go on what we're seeing. So I'm loving JT. I can see a bit of resemblance with myself and him, and loving the game, wanting to, you know, play everything to 100 at every opportunity you get. Loving Dylan, obviously. I see them as very similar. Mm-hmm. And my favorite of the season is actually Lisa.
Yeah.
Don't ask me why, I don't know. I'm absolutely digging Lisa. And then there's a few others out there that you can throw out that I'm generally liking as characters. Yeah, Adams, Aaron seems like a player that's switched on. Josh even seems pretty switched on for a bit of an alpha. And then I think it's a bit obvious the players that I guess I wouldn't like from this season. Liam's and Tess's and even Joe's that went in episode one. Mm-hmm. Anyone who sort of doesn't get the game or just wants to keep the tribe physically strong sort of
give you Lockie flashbacks.
Gives me Lockie flashbacks.
Right. Well, yeah, well, I won't begrudge you that. But, yeah, it's definitely been a really great season, and I would say already just a massive step up from season one. I honestly think there's been so much strategic meat on the bone from these first two episodes, even with some simple votes, or this was a simple vote, but just that jump from season one I think has been pretty obvious to see.
Yeah, definitely. And, look, in every season you get a group that's cast that are going to have such a range of Survivor experience and knowledge and whatnot, that sometimes there are going to be episodes where the vote's very simple or boring or basic. And, you know, we may have had that this episode, but I still in general feel like this episode was really strong and I'm really high on it based on all the other things that we saw and obviously that new twist.
Yeah, I agree. So let's go through the episode, I think, just from start to finish so we don't miss anything with all the details that happened here.
Sure.
First, I want to talk about Chani coming back from Tribal Council because I feel like we got more of a post-tribal scene than we did even a pre-tribal scene last week, which is obviously not saying a lot. But we did speculate last week, was it a split vote or was it an actual blindside because Aaron, who seemed like JT's main ally, did vote for Carla and not Yos. And through X interviews and obviously what we saw in this episode was that Liam truly was blindsided, so he definitely wasn't included. And I have heard in exit interviews, take what you will if you think they're canon or not, but that JT and Aaron decided to split their votes so that Aaron could kind of feel like, make Liam feel like he was still in the loop and that they maybe wouldn't be seen as so much of a power couple. So I kind of love that move because it's so much strategy so early, so I love that.
Yeah, if that's the case, if that's not just revisionist history, if that's the actual case, that's some in-depth strategy. I mean, we did the exact same thing in our first tribal council with Ziggy. We had her voting with Adam the night we knew that Adam was going home so that she had intel coming from that side. So, yeah, props to Aaron and JT if that's correct.
And props to you guys working out at your first tribal council too. See, these international seasons of Survivor, like, we don't need to get to Emerge to be bringing out that really cool detailed strategy, right?
No, I honestly feel like with having such large tribes, there's so many variables and numbers going each way that, you know, you see some really strong strategic play.
Yeah, I mean, that episode 2, Tribal Council with you and the Chicken Idol, like, I still don't really know what happened and I feel like I've analyzed it to death and I'm still really confused by it. So definitely some interesting early game strategy.
Well, that's the thing. I've always said this is that as a fan, you're never going to see the best conversations out there, the people's best sides of their games, you're never going to be able to witness because the second that you see those conversations, you as a viewing audience are going to know who's going home that night. So they withhold, I believe, the best conversations out on the island.
So true. And then you find out stuff like this from ex interviews and you're like, that's so cool, but it makes sense why they couldn't show it to you in the moment.
That's right. And with so much going on and with big tribes, there's so much left out of the game. We're only seeing 1% of what's happening out there. So, yeah, I mean, that's amazing that if they went ahead with that, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the original JT when he didn't vote for Coach when Coach went home. So that was really cool, but also in a first tribal council, so even better. But I think one of the big things that we can talk about with Chani now is in hindsight, and hindsight is obviously 2020, but did they make the correct decision in voting out Yos? Like, they obviously lost that strength. They're now on this, like, terrible losing streak that they don't seem to have a way out of. Would you think that was the right move last episode? And now they got rid of Carla anyway.
Yeah. As a viewer, I love that vote. I love that they got out there. I'm going to put this in quotations, their strongest female competitor. I don't know how you can say that she's the strongest after one or two challenges, but
she was very strong.
Oh, definitely, she was an asset in challenges, but as a viewer, I love the fact that she went home first. I absolutely love that. Was it right for other people's games? Maybe not, because if they are all already aware that she's pissing people off and annoying people and driving this, you know, we keep physically strong card, maybe she'd be the perfect person to drag through and knowing that there's going to be a time where everyone's like, we are so over her, let's finally get rid of her. But I guess on the flip side of that, you look at people like JT, who was picked last by her.
He was the last guy, yeah.
He was the last guy picked by her. He's if she's pushing this keep the tribe physically strong, I guess she's someone that needs to go early. So yeah, you can see it from all sort of sides of the. But as a viewer, love it.
Yeah, I listened to her and some of her postseason press, and some of the things she was saying, I was like, this was not good for JT. Like, she was all about strength, and she didn't seem to love JT. So he was the instigator of that move, and so I get it from his perspective. Also, she talked about how she wishes Survivor just started at the Merge and was just all challenges, and that's how she'd win. So I was like, yeah, you know, that's not exactly the game that I want to watch.
And, you know, this is why people are so passionate about Survivor, because the fittest, strongest most beautiful person doesn't always win. It's an even playing field the second that you walk out there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to go on something that is, I'm going to win because I'm great at physical challenges, you're on the wrong show. Like, this is a social game. And if the biggest, strongest person won every season, we wouldn't be in a 36th season in the US.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, well, clearly she won the first challenge and then was immediately sent home. So that rings very true. But in terms of tribal dynamics, I think the most interesting thing was the scene at Kankow that we went to next, where everything you thought you knew about their tribe dynamics last week, and we gave a ton of props to Dylan, and then this episode, we find out there's a new five without him, and Adam, who he had included in his alliance last week, called him a dick in confessionals. I was like, where is this coming from? Like, is that just Adam being, like, hyperbolic and, like, his usual funny character? Or, like, does he actually think that? Because we have seen nothing between these two people to warrant that kind of reaction.
Yeah, there's obviously something that we're not seeing that Dylan's doing around camp for them to be so off of him. You feel like we're really missing what's gone down there, because mm-hmm. it really seemed like he was in control of I guess, starting that five alliance in episode one. So, you know, even just for him to have to watch that back and, you know, see footage of him sitting isolated by himself, you know, it could have been a 30-second sit down between getting firewood for the tribe or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I am fully aware of, you know, how the editing can change things up to make you look like you're completely on the outs when mm-hmm. you may not be. And yeah, so I do not know how that happened. I would have loved to have seen how that happened. He got so far in the outs, but you know, if there's anyone from that tribe that I think can get themselves out of that situation, it's definitely Dylan.
Yeah, this conversation between, I think it was like Tessa and Josh and Adam, it really illuminated a lot of these new tribe dynamics. Firstly, they call Dylan a goat. And I have to say, no one on day four is a goat. Not even Liam. Not even Liam right now is a goat. Because you've still got 36 days to play, like, as if you can call anyone a goat right now.
They haven't even gone to a tribal council yet.
It's crazy. Yeah.
No one is a goat on day four, day five.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly feel like even before the merge, even in like the Australian version, it's 55 days long where the merge isn't till day 30.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you do in those first 30 days is really discounted or discredited, unless it's like super in your face and amazing, because people only remember what's recent and what's about them, and that all comes down to the merge and the jury. So on day four to call someone a goat, I mean, I would have loved for that to happen for me, because then I'm like, happily drag me yeah. to the merge and watch me cause conflict. So hopefully they do that with Dylan and he can cause some havoc.
Well, they did talk about it with him, like how they don't need to get rid of him next because then they'll have him around to get rid of him later. I'm like, you could just get rid of him now. Like, wouldn't that be the point? But
I just look at someone like that. He's clearly switched on smart, knows the game. You'd be far better to get rid of one of the like the floating girls in that tribe, like maybe a Tara or a Acacia. Sorry, you'd rather get rid of a Dylan than a Tara or a Acacia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he's someone that could have influence. So
yeah,
and can read and understand the game. So yeah, it's strange. I really feel like we're missing, as a viewer, seeing what's truly happening out there, but they've obviously got storylines to tell, and that's why.
Yeah, I think, you know, drag him at your own peril. Like, why would you keep him around when he's clearly really smart and strategic and you don't
exactly
seem to like him, and then he gets to a swap and he meets up with other people that he can use, like, and work with against you? Doesn't really make sense to me.
Especially because Dylan himself went to those people to start that alliance. They are fully aware he's capable of this. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's strange. It's a strange one.
But you were also in not a great spot early on, like Dylan is now.
Yep.
Do you have any strategy for how he can get himself out there, or at least get himself, you know, besides being dragged, how could he get himself to a swap?
Yeah, I guess right now he's in that advantage where his tribe's still all together. I haven't been to tribal council, so they've got a huge amount of numbers. So, you know, he's either, I guess, got to go down. He's got a few paths to go down, sorry. So he could try his hardest to throw Keisha, Tara, Lisa under the bus,
mm-hmm.
or he could try his hardest to consolidate something with the three of those, and then try and get one of the other that tight five, mm-hmm. Maybe a swing person. I would probably view Adam as the most likely if he's got a relationship with Keisha or Tara.
Although he does think Dylan is a dick.
What's that? Sorry,
he does think that Dylan is a dick.
Yeah, but if Dylan can approach the girls, get them to get Adam on side, mm-hmm. get them to talk shit about Dylan, but we're going to use him in this five. You know, there's something that maybe they can pull Adam over as and now create a new majority. Other than that, maybe finding an idol or something like that, just to stir up the game like I did.
Yeah.
It's a really shit position to be in.
Yeah. I also thought Tessa's relationship with Lisa continues to fascinate me because they've been presented as this, like, really obvious dichotomy. Like, all we really know of each of them, and Henry said last week that we haven't got enough of everyone's personal story, which I'm really agreeing with 2 episodes in. We haven't seen enough of that really personal depth to the characters. But what we know of Tessa is that she's, like, a survivor noob. And what we know of Lisa is that she's this, like, super fan strategist. So they're this dichotomy, but they have a relationship that's now been mentioned in 2 episodes. And definitely. I thought it was funny that Tessa – well, not funny, but interesting that Tessa was very willing to – she said, let's bring Lisa along, but didn't want her in that actual tight five. It kind of reminded me of, like, Tessa's the popular girl who doesn't want to sit with Lisa at lunch but will, like, copy off her notes later and is definitely, like, using the super fan side of her, which she probably could have used at the outpost, but we'll get to that.
I love that analogy. That's essentially what it is. You maybe look at it from Tessa's point of view. I might be giving her a touch too much credit, but, you know, she could be looking at her alliance and going, I am the only girl. Lisa did look out for me on day one, mm-hmm. gave me some advice, which was now reflecting on it really important and useful. So maybe I just keep Lisa around as someone who I think potentially has my back against these boys.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the Michelle Schubert and Hannah Shapiro relationship where they were in these, like, different groups, I guess, like the nerdy clique and the popular clique, which is what's kind of happening with Kung Kao, but they seem to have, like, a tight bond that they shared between the two of them. So if it's as close as it looks just based on the fact that we've heard about it so much, it might be a bit to do with that. But it's interesting because they really do seem like polar opposites.
They seem like super polar opposites. I can see more Michelle and Hannah being closer together. Michelle so much with her faith and, mm-hmm. you know, Hannah's more of the Lisa than Michelle is of the Tess, but I can mm-hmm. see that.
And yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing Michelle into my podcast. She's my number one crush. So there you go.
I didn't even know that. Not even doing that stalkery research on you.
Love it.
So let's start now and talk about the reward challenge. A lot of, you know, it seemed really tough. A lot of people throwing up and collapsing. Medic was called. I mean, I feel like Medic is kind of like the 19th man of this cast because we saw them so much in this episode. But my headline from the reward challenge was that for some reason, we saw Matt's full butt and they didn't blur anything. So I went back to check and I did some investigative journalism here. Went back to check. Season 1, Survivor New Zealand did blur the butts. This season, they didn't. I mean, that is some conscious choice that they have made not to blur the butts. I mean, I feel like it was a good production decision, but it's just funny that it's like they're on the same network. Why did they make this decision?
Okay, I've got a theory on the butts.
Theory on the butts.
Yeah, our episode 2, the whole promo was about Lockie being, de-panted. Is that the right word?
De-panted? I don't think de-panted? So. No,
I really me either. So. He had his pants pulled down, and the whole episode leading up to it was about that, and they showed Lockie's bare bum. But it was only the challenge before – not the challenge, but the one-on-one before Lockie's that Ben had his pants fully brought down, and they blurred it out, mm-hmm. and there was nothing about it. And that – I was there and witnessed it. That is because – Lockie has a pretty bum and Ben does not. So I feel like maybe season 1 New Zealand did not have pretty bums and need to get some waxing. And season 2 Matt obviously has a baby's bum.
Yeah, I think that you've cracked the case. And yes, that was an intentional pun. And I'm so, so sorry and ashamed about that. But besides for all of how hard the challenge was and Matt's bum, which we've now discussed at great length, what I really thought was interesting about this whole reward challenge segment and after was that Adam stood out to me as playing such a great social game. Like, obviously, he loves watermelons more than one probably should love watermelons. But he just seemed really approachable, really positive. Everyone was hanging off his every word, laughing. Like, it didn't surprise me that he was the one that both alliances wanted, like, in their clique.
I truly feel like Adam is just being himself out there, and it is so non-threatening and unassuming that I really feel like his game is the strongest at the moment. I hold him in the highest position because he's not only found himself in a tight alliance, but he's also got the respect from the guys. You know, you saw how hard he pushed himself in that challenge, and then he's got the girls like Tessa and whatnot, really believing in that they're his closest,
Tessa called him his closest person.
Exactly. And then everyone else around the camp just talks so highly and positive and thinks he's great. And you saw them laughing at his stories. Like, that's genuine reactions. If someone tells a story out on Survivor and you're like, shut up, it's just watermelon, you roll your eyes, you don't laugh unless you like that person. So I can tell you, he's obviously finding himself in a really strong position, and I don't think it's got anything to do with his strategic gameplay at the moment. I honestly feel like it's just him as a person.
Yeah, I mean, he's the kind of person where you might see him as the funny character, and then he sneaks through to the end and gets all the votes just because everyone likes him so much. Was there anyone that you played with that you thought was in a similar vein to that?
Early on in my game, Peter was definitely Adam. He had this crack up of a laugh.
I've heard that laugh.
He laughed like a hyena.
Yep.
And it was something that I thought when I first heard it, okay, after 6 days, this is going to get on everyone's nerves. Brilliant. But after 6 days, what it actually did was the opposite. It was like everyone was feeling low and slumped. They were waiting for Petey to laugh so that everyone could laugh at his laugh, and they all thrived off it. So, yeah, I definitely saw it very early on with Peter, and I guess you could throw Luke into that as well. Mm-hmm. Luke was like just this, yeah, I'm just a carefree guy. I'm cracking jokes here, there, everywhere. It's very unassuming. And then, boom, he could go deep and take all the jury votes. So, yeah, if I was playing with Adam, he'd be probably one of the first I would want to get out.
Yeah, I mean, just have someone having
a... And that's a compliment to you, Adam.
Yeah, just someone having that positive outlook, a smile on their face, making everyone laugh. Like, I feel like that's invaluable when you're all starving and sleepy.
Most definitely. And if it comes down to, you know, for example, Adam and one other person, like, which one of these do we get rid of first? You're always going to get rid of the person that doesn't bring the vibe up around camp.
Mm-hmm. But so, Adam, for what it's worth, you like watermelons entirely too much. Like, as someone who likes watermelons, you've taken it too far.
To have a tattoo with watermelon in it, like, I love it. What was his life motto?
Like, it was like peace, love, and watermelon.
Brilliant. I'm shipping it.
So let's talk about what to me was the best part of the episode and one of the better things I've seen in recent Survivor across any country, which was the Outpost. To me, the Outpost is everything I wish Ghost Island was. It's got like elements of that cool, like, you know, let's share the lie or let's share the secret and cross tribal alliances like they had in San Juan del Sur or Token Chains, where, you know, two people from different tribes would go to Exile Island and one person would get a clue, but you had that ability to form relationships based on these experiences you were having together that no one else was having. And what I love so much about it is that where Ghost Island is, you know, one bad decision can haunt you forever. This to me is like 80 tiny micro decisions and any one of them can screw you. So I definitely want to go through point by point on all of those decisions that JT and Tessa had to make and what I loved and didn't love. But before that, what do you think of the twist itself?
I love the Outpost. Anything that brings the game to the contestants, I enjoy. So you even can even see it at like an auction where you may win cookies, but you can give them to only 5 out of the 9 people that are there. I love anything that brings the game to the contestants, because you could have the most boring, mundane cast, but if the game's brought to them, then they are forced to make these decisions. And I as a fan, wish that we saw a JT Dillon face off, but to see how that Outpost played out, it was brilliant TV. I don't think it was smart play from either JT or Tess, but it was just brilliant TV. And I hope are we going to see this every week, the Outpost?
I think so. I think that's what they're trying to do.
So the Outpost is going to be Ghost Island 2.0, like the better version.
Yeah, I would love to see Matt and Dave, obviously, as their friends. So that would be really interesting to see how that happens.
This is fantastic. Bring on the outpost. I love it.
All right, so let's go through and just criticize everything that JT and Tess did in this scene. First off, from JT's perspective, I'm going to say you don't want to be going to the outpost. Like, the fact that he immediately volunteered, caught out that he thought it was some sort of dilemma type situation, I was like, JT, no, like, he even says later he doesn't want to be seen as, like, the mastermind, and, like, this, it's just a massive spotlight shining on him.
Yeah, I think it was in a confessional very early on. He was saying that he doesn't want to be seen as someone that's running the majority or running the vote, and even though he will be. So volunteering for the outpost, this is why I just feel like I can relate to him so much, because there's an opportunity to do something. He wants to do it. He doesn't only want to do it. He wants to do it at 100% and take it by the balls, and it's maybe not the best gameplay in such a long game.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when you guys had to vote for the reward that Ziggy ended up getting to get the Super Idol. You definitely wanted to be voted into that, right? That's what you said on the show.
Yes, oh, definitely. And I just feel like I was in a position at that point where I had the majority, that I was already the one that the other people in my tribe were unsure of. So I was trying to push it to my team of, you don't want the title that I've got. You're going to get that by going on this, because everyone's going to be unsure of you. They're already unsure of me. Let me know.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go, and then I will relay everything back to my alliance exactly how it was.
Yeah.
So that was my sell of why I wanted to go.
But you were obviously in front, whereas JT's trying to be more under the radar, and it's just not working, because I think 5 different people called him smart or strategic or schemey or some synonym of that this episode alone, and that included people on the other tribe. It included people in his own alliance. Like, he's not exactly under the radar right now.
Yeah, I feel like the play there is to really make Tessa feel comfortable with you, rather than using it like, you know, it was almost like a Russell Hance-esque, you know, mm-hmm. threatening fear tactics. Like, if you don't do this, I'm going to go back and do that.
Oh, it was straight up blackmail.
Yeah, and now Tessa's feeling uncomfortable about her decision, where I feel like he needed to make her feel comfortable and be like, even once she received that, say, hey, look, let's read it together. There's obviously going to be something advantageous at back at my camp. If we both have it, we can work together when we get into merge, rather than going, you have to show me or I'm telling everyone else what you happened just here. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think you can go to blackmail, like plan B or C, but you don't start with the blackmail, surely.
Yeah, and I think he also like opened up himself now to show that he's capable of that, and he's willing to go down and play that game. So now Tessa's going to go back and relay all that information. So all of a sudden, if he had gone with a softer approach, and Tessa would have gone back to camp and gone, oh, JT was really lovely, he was really sweet, I beat him at the fire challenge, he was so upset, you know, I chose not to get mattresses, which is terrible, like, anyway. But and then it's all like, she goes then to her type 5 and go, okay, this is what happened, and I really feel like JT is someone we can work with down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, his approach has made her tell her type 5, like, whoa, he's good. Like, he's real good. We've got to watch out for him. So I love it as a viewer. I love someone playing so aggressive like I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not tearing on JT here. I made many, many mistakes. And when you're out there, you just want to play so hard and fast.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I definitely feel like he needed to bring her in rather than make it like a blackmail thing.
Yeah, because they came out of that interaction, I think, feeling really bad about each other. Like, I have to say on the record, obviously the fact that JT was able to Jedi mind trick into her doing something so, you know, out of what would be good for her, and she hadn't even seen the clue and just showed it to him while, you know, looking at it with him the first time was crazy to me. The fact that he managed to manipulate her like that was amazing. But then he starts the manipulation by saying, literally, this is my time to shine. Something that Matt later called attention to, and I was absolutely cringing, because it was like, hi, I'm about to manipulate you. And they both knew it. And the fact that she still fell for it is still in itself amazing.
Like, I can understand Tessa feeling like flustered and in that position. She doesn't know what to do, what's the right thing to do. But Tessa, read the clue yourself. Say, I won this clue. I'm going to read it, and then I'll decide if I am going to share it with you. And she would have read it, realized that it's a clue that potentially an idol that potentially both of them could go for at the challenge, and her saying, sorry, I'm choosing not to share this with you. If it was a, if it was something that was back at camps, then she may have gone, okay, I've read it, let's share this information. But to have JT read it at the exact same time that she has read it is just, oh, I just can't comprehend why you would let someone see something that you haven't seen yet.
Yeah, and while he, I think, botched the approach, I mean, from her perspective as well, she's not exactly sharing the clue and saying, hey, this is something we're really going to have together and it's going to be the basis of this really cool cross-tribal alliance and no one's going to know. Like, she says, you know, oh, wow, you really got me. Like, she's clearly feeling very bad about him. So, like, obviously definitely, he's going to go back and immediately sell you out. Like, what loyalty does he have to you? Like, that was not surprising at all.
Exactly. I feel like it was not played greatly from both sides, but I think the outcome, once the episode had finished, it's definitely higher in Tess's camp than it is in JT's. I feel like there's more people feeling eerie about JT than there is about Tessa going, and Tessa also has the idol without JT's side knowing for sure who has it, even though they assume, and they assume right. At least I feel like Tessa in all got out of that situation with a tick compared to JT, even though I feel like they both played it wrong.
Well, I think the reason that it worked out well for her is that I did kind of like parts of her approach back at camp. Now, I didn't like the lie about the mattresses. That was insane. Firstly, if you get offered mattresses on Survivor, which no one would, you would take them, surely, even if the other tribe were to get an equal amount of reward. Like, if I were to hear my tribe mate gave up mattresses, I would say, okay, I hate you for that. And also, it's definitely a lie because that would never happen. But she comes back and tells him that they want mattresses because she's never seen a season of the show. And I guess she thinks that mattresses are something that you win, let alone win in week two. Like, she probably thinks they're getting a lounge set next weekend.
This is just when it's so clear that someone has not watched a season and they're definitely lying. And I'm sure Dylan picked up on it straight away. Mm-hmm. The fact that he's a super fan. It's like, how many seasons have we seen a tribe rewarded with mattresses, not only as a reward, but on day four or day five?
No.
It's just not a thing. So it's straight away you're just going, okay, she's full of it. It's definitely an idol. The fact that Matt was, you know, one of the first things he said as we arrived on day one, the idols are in play. It's just so obvious. And I'm sure that the people that aren't in that type five would know she's fully BSing.
Yeah, it's honestly one of my favorite running themes now, like to see Tessa's reaction to rewards. I mean, she must think rewards are amazing because she thinks that they could get mattresses. Now she's going to be like, oh, we get melted chocolate this week? Oh, that's good. No, I was expecting like a TV set.
We get a week of Netflix.
Yeah. That's why you need to watch the show.
I remember when we went into our third or fourth reward challenge and we were playing for salt, pepper, and herbs.
Yeah.
And I was just like so underwhelmed. I couldn't care less for it.
Hey, Caleb
like,
almost died for that.
Whoop-dee-doo. We're like putting ourselves through all this vigorous challenge just for some salt, pepper, and herbs. And I kid you not, it is like the best reward I ever won.
Oh, really?
It was a game changer with our rice. I would give away all the pillows and all the boating.
The mattresses?
Gear in the world. I wouldn't give away mattresses, but I'll give away everything else, all our comfort items for that salt, pepper, and herbs. It was incredible.
Yeah. Didn't love the lie. That was terrible. But in saying that, I do think that what we've seen from these dilemma type situations is there really is no perfect lie. Like, I'm standing here saying that that's a terrible lie, but I don't know if I have a better option for her. And that's why I so strongly believe that you shouldn't put your hand up for these dilemmas or outpost situations, because I don't think that it will win you the game, but I think it could definitely completely torpedo your game. And we've seen it happen with, you know, So Kim and even our own Nick Iodanza, where it's just, even if you come back like Mike Holloway did and tell the truth, they're suspicious of you. So I don't think there's a perfect lie, and I think it's just a terrible situation to put yourself in.
Yeah, if I was put in that position and I was at the outpost, I guess everything's circumstantial, I know this, but I just generally feel like the best outcome is just telling the truth. Mm-hmm. And by telling the truth, I mean telling the truth to your core alliance, mm-hmm. and doing it as soon as possible. And this is where the part of the outpost that I did like of JT's game was when he went back and he essentially told the truth, except for the fact that it's going to be the thing's going to be on their side. The idol's going to be on their side of the challenge, which was a lie in his mind, but ended up being the truth. Mm-hmm. So I like his approach back at camp, and 50% of me likes Tess's approach of telling a lie to the majority and then telling the truth to the alliance. That's how I would play it. I just would have a better lie of maybe like I didn't win the challenge. Yeah. I didn't win the fire making challenge. Exactly. And then it's her word against JT's.
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously like a strong lie, but I totally agree. If you come back and say that you won, but you don't have a reward, that's so suspect. But to just come back and say it was a fire making challenge, I lost, and then JT is going to tell his tribe that you lost, and now you're in like a war of words with JT, and everyone's really suspicious of him anyway. So it's just like a he said, she said that you could probably win. Certainly better than saying you won mattresses, but again, not a perfect lie. I don't believe there's a perfect lie. And even when Nick came back in his season and did tell the majority a lie, the whole tribe a lie, and then went to his alliance and told them the truth, they were already so suspect of him that it was too late at that point. But I do think that you want to tell your alliance the absolute truth as soon as physically possible, which I think is what Tessa did, which is why it worked out for her. And I thought that that was a good job on her part. But even if before you go to the outpost, you go to your allies and say, just don't even worry what I say to the tribe. Like, I'm going to come to you next because I'm going for my alliance, not for my tribe. And I'll tell you guys as soon as I possibly can what actual truth was. But even then, if you tell the truth, they might not believe you. It's such a hard situation. And I think that for JT, I think losing the challenge was a blessing in disguise for him because it allowed him to not get an idol that's super public, which just would have added to his threat level. And he was able to be super honest with his allies because it wasn't that bad a story for him. So I think that's what his game needed. And yes, the other tribe got the idol, which isn't ideal. But in saying that, they seem to kind of know where it is. They can monitor that situation. They can deal with it. And I think the fact that he lost ended up being really good for him.
I think losing that for JT was the best case scenario for him.
Yeah.
I completely agree with your checks and balances. Tell your alliance before you go that this is what I'm going to do. I will relay the truth, but I've obviously got to lie to the majority in case it's advantageous to us.
Yeah.
So yeah, I completely agree with everything you just said.
But from JT's perspective, you know, you were someone who was seen from the jump as really smart, really strategic, kind of like he is now, and he's not doing himself any favors to, you know, curtail that. But do you think that he can overcome this? Like, how does he minimize his threat level now?
Yeah, he definitely can. He's just got to step back a touch. He's just got to let other people call some shots for a little bit, show that he's willing to, like, go with the majority. Show that he's loyal to what he says he's going to vote, make sure he votes that so that, you know, that lines up with everything he's been saying back at camp. While still playing a seedy game, you can still play a seedy game of, you know, manipulation, lies, and getting people on side without doing it in such a in-your-face way. And I know it's a kettle black me talking about that, but it's so hard when you're out there. If you're a fan and you want to play and you want to play big, and yeah, you want to do these moves that are seen on TV, but you know, it might just be better for him just to take a step back.
Yeah. And honest opinion, last question about the outpost. What was a worse lie, the mattress lie or Ziggy coming back from a night away and saying that she got fruit?
Oh, so I never believed Ziggy once.
No.
But I felt like she was going to tell me what it was. And it was like 15 minutes later, we were dragged to a challenge and I had to drop my buff and got shafted, like, you know. So I don't know if she ever would have told me the truth, but I just think mattresses is just shocking. If someone come back to me like, oh, we got to choose some mattresses for us or for both or none, I'd just be like, yeah, the old Andrew Torrens BS Raider would just be binging.
Mm-hmm. And I think that Tessa's level of inexperience with Survivor was pretty obvious during the fire making challenge, which was my favorite moment of the entire episode. I'm not joking. When Matt says, Survivor's ready, she says yes. Like, she didn't know through 40 seasons of the show that that is a rhetorical question.
Oh, I love it. Like, come on in, guys. Okay.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was like. Like, I rewinded that moment because I loved it so much.
That's brilliant. We need a GIF made of that.
It was a small moment, but it was good.
It's brilliant.
All right, so let's move on from the outpost, no matter how good it was, and talk about the rest of the episode. We move on to this scene where Chani's talking about how they had the worst night ever. We didn't actually get to see the night itself, but it sounded pretty bad. People were potentially going to get medevac. Like, did not sound like a good time.
Yeah, it's horrific out there. When it rains, even if it just rains for 10 minutes, it's still horrible because you're exposed to it. But I did see when they rocked up to the challenge, there was the girls in the front and I think JT at the back. They were wearing like Kathmandu waterproof jackets. Like, when is that Survivor? I was not a fan of that. And if, it still would have sucked, but the fact that they had those jackets just, it irked me. I was given a singlet.
Yeah, that was not a good Survivor outfit, but it is the right of every ex-Survivor player to complain that the others have it easier than you.
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. That's why you go on the show, so you can complain about it later, right?
Exactly. No one had it as hard as season two, night three in Samoa.
Yep. And so we moved to this challenge, which was one of my favorite challenges, the Pearl Island Classic Challenge, Shoulder the Load. It's a challenge that I really, really love, and I have all these thoughts about the strategy and where you should put the bags and everything, but I kind of think no strategy would have worked because Chani was just so incredibly outgunned by Kung Kao, and I hope this isn't something that we continue to see, but they are just so physically outmatched by Kung Kao right now.
Oh, just the fact that all three were still standing at the end of the challenge just shows that it doesn't matter what strategy you put into place. It's no good when the tribe's too strong. And, you know, I just feel like there are some challenges in the game that it doesn't matter what you do, you're not going to win it because unless it comes down to, you know, a puzzle or luck of a ring toss or something like that, just sometimes strength wins. I mean, it was my last challenge when I got voted out that came down to something like that. Mm-hmm. It was a 6'9" ex-NFL quarterback and a female Olympian versus me and Tara, like two couch potatoes. We're like something you're never going to win. I felt for them going into that challenge. I guess there's not really much more they could have done. I love the challenges, though, this season. I love that they're replicating U.S. challenges that have been successful. I think this challenge was also done on South Pacific with Jim Rice. I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah, I love that they're using some of these old challenges. I know that in the first Survivor New Zealand challenge season, they did that a lot. And they used my favorite ever challenge, which is Touchy Subjects, which the U.S. show is kind of sworn off now. But with these international versions, they can do so many of these. Like, Australian Survivor did it too, where they just used some of these really great old school challenges, and I love seeing that on the international versions. I just wish it wasn't so lopsided.
Yes, definitely. And I feel like maybe they might bring a challenge forward that they had planned for later on that might benefit the Blue Tribe, forgot their name off the top of my head.
But what would benefit Chani at this point? Don't even know.
Well, it's obviously something that's like the equalizer at the end where doesn't matter what happens in the physical side of things. It all comes down to realistically the puzzle at the end or, you know, some form of luck. So, yeah, I feel like, you know, they might potentially step in and bring something forward that could see the other tribe finally go to tribal council.
Mm. Well, definitely the most interesting part about this challenge, considering it was so lopsided, was that they were going to find an idol at the challenge, which is something I always love to see. I did kind of wish, though, that the idol was on the other side of the mat, so it wasn't on the opposite side from Chani, because I would have loved to just see someone like crazy like JT just go and just tackle a bunch of people. I don't know if he would have done that, but there wasn't an option because they just couldn't get there.
Definitely.
Imagine if it was like kind of in the middle of them. Like, there would have been some sort of war for this idol.
Like, have the mats really close. Have it on the corner that's closest to each mat. And, let's see the dynamics play out. I do have to say, I do like the fact that the idol was under Tessa's mat, considering she did win the fire-making challenge.
Mm.
And massive props to Brad for grabbing the idol the way he did when he did. I don't know the... the shoelace untied needed to happen. But like props for doing it so fluently when they were just like taking a minute to strategize. Yeah, loved it. But I personally would have liked to have seen a mat in the middle of both tribes that were competing and them having to walk over that mat to apply the weights. And that way, every time someone walked over, you would have seen everyone's eyes watch them super carefully. And it's something that you could have grabbed after the challenge had finished, or, you know, while walking the bags, you could accidentally have dropped the weight and gone down and picked it up. And I just think that would have created a more thrilling dynamic.
Yeah, because JT did get in that information out of Tessa, but he didn't really benefit from it because he couldn't possibly get the idol. I mean, he did get a lot of intel into that tribe, and he used that really smart and strategically to use that information to get those further insights. But yeah, they couldn't actually realistically get the idol. And if anyone's going to go and tackle a bunch of people on day five to get an idol, I think JT would have been the one to do it. But this was just an impossibility.
I know. I just think, is there any benefit at all maybe going to the tribe? Like, guys, she found a clue to the idol. It's going to be on her side. I know exactly where it's going to be. How about when we rock up, we just go walk over and like sort of brush them over and
walk
pick
over
it up
them.
For, have a tribe idol. Like, I don't know. Like, it was really a lose-lose, and it almost discredited anything he did strategically in that outpost, because he was never a chance to get that idol. He's just now exposed himself as someone who's capable of playing a manipulative game.
Yeah, but what they did get out of it, and what I think Hung Cao were way too like ready to offer up, was that they saw these tribe dynamics, and I think Josh and Brad were telling guys like Aaron and Dave like really important intel into their tribe. This is in all caps in my notes because I was just so like, what are you doing? They told them that they knew there was an idol, but that other people don't know that there's an idol. Like,
yeah.
Why would you give the other tribe so much insight into your tribe dynamics?
Yeah, it's just really amateur play. It's like rocking up to a challenge, being asked a question by the host and giving away everything that's happening at camp. You just don't do it. And I would have loved to have seen those conversations. Like, they're the things that I want to see as a viewer, those like off the camera candid moments that, you know, people making mistakes and slipping up, because they were quite willing to show us them back at camp talking about what they've been told. It's like, show us that those conversations, cut down the reward challenge so we can see, like, you know, any form of strategy, good, bad or ugly.
Yeah, I mean, we did see you saying to Henry that you would jump over in a reward challenge, I think in the Lockie's butt reward challenge, right?
Yep.
And that was one of my favorite moments because we don't often get to see it.
Yep.
So did you think at that point that you were just so on the outs that you needed to make those cross-tribal bonds, whereas like Josh and Brad are clearly in power, so it's interesting to me that they would then give up the goods on the tribe that they're currently dominating?
Yeah, for me, I honestly felt like I was so far out of my tribe that I needed to I was honestly throwing Hail Marys, and I kept around camp. I kept talking to one person, Jared, my alliance member, about a potential mutiny coming up, because I was trying to plant this idea inside production's head, because they knew I was going to be a game player, stir stuff up. If I was to go on the second tribal council, you know, they're losing someone who's going to create TV. So I kept trying to plant this mutiny idea in their head. So when we got to the challenge, I said to Henry, as we're walking up to compete against each other, dude, I'm so far on the outs. If there's a mutiny, watch me. I'm going to jump and take it, and I'll be on your tribe. And I was just really trying to plant this seed in production of potentially getting a mutiny episode rather than an elimination episode, because of, you know, we know there can't always be an elimination episode in Australian Survivor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was me doing it. I think that, yeah, like you said, with them, it's just a position of power. I guess bros being bros, they could look at it as like, you know, recruiting the two strongest males on their side of the tribe. And I'm sure Matt has talked like he's getting good vibes from Dave on the other tribe without letting them know that he knows them, and vice versa. So I think maybe it's just potentially building those relationships. And I see it going down that Survivor New Zealand are not going to get rid of any of their alpha males from either tribe. The winning challenges is way too important to them. And I personally see those five boys coming together and going really deep and, yeah, running it.
But Aaron seems like a bit of a sensitive soul to me, and his main ally is JT. So, but Dave, obviously, he has that connection to Matt, and he did tell the tribe about that. He gave the information, but he did seem still keen to work with those guys. So I think he's keeping his options open. I could definitely see him flipping to that side.
Yeah.
But yeah, the first season of New Zealand Survivor definitely had an alpha alliance. And I think that I could see this going a similar way for sure. I mean, it kind of already is, but if they bring in those extra members, then it's just like particularly extra.
Exactly. I clench and hope that that's not the case. I hope we see, you know, in anyone of like a Dylan, a JT, a Lisa flip the game and go down a different path and create a new sort of like direction of what Survivor can be for Survivor New Zealand.
Yeah. But I did think it was interesting. So some of the pre-tribal dynamics, we got a lot more of that this episode, which was definitely a tick, even though it wasn't a very interesting vote. I mean, we've barely mentioned Carla on this podcast and it was her boot episode. So she wasn't a massive factor in this episode, I guess, until the end, till she was fighting for her life. But I obviously, as always, love Liam's reaction. He is becoming, right before his second tribal council, he still doesn't really seem to think that there are alliances. I'm like, this guy is the Dr. Sean of Survivor New Zealand.
He is definitely the Dr. Sean. He's just voting alphabetically. He's pulling numbers out of, or names out of hats. He's just got, everyone should get along. We're one big happy alliance. It's just, how can you go apply yourself to a game like this and think that everyone's just going to go along with like an easy vote? It's just not the case.
And he was blindsided last episode and it still didn't seem to wake him up to it at all.
Can I contradict myself?
Yeah, always.
Liam is a goat on day 5.
He's not. No one's a goat. Not even Liam, surely.
No, I just, he needs to start
playing,
being on the in.
Yeah.
Even if it's not playing and whatnot, even if it's just knowing who's going home, because it's going to get to a stage where he will get to the merge and people will go, Liam hasn't had a clue at every single tribal council.
No.
The wall's been pulled over his eyes. Okay, let's bring him all the way to the end, because my argument against him is he never had any idea of what was going on.
Yeah, well, to this point, that's definitely true, and I'm waiting to see which shoe drops first. Will Tessa find out that rewards in Survivor are really not that great, or will Liam realize that there have been alliances since day one and you just haven't known about it? So that's an interesting thing to track. But
love it.
We go to Tribal Council, and Frankie was set up as, I guess, the other boot, but I don't know how legit that was, because she didn't even end up getting any votes. Carla voted for Liam. And I don't see why they would have got rid of Frankie. She's in that 5-person alliance. To me, she does seem like the fifth, just in the way they talk about their allies. But she's in the 5-person alliance. She is stronger than Carla from what we've seen. And, I mean, unless she's going to get actually medevaced, I don't know why she would be an option to get rid of right now.
Yeah, I personally just feel like it was all circumstantial. The fact that she suffered under those conditions gave it a storyline as to who else it could be other than Carla, because I just honestly feel like it was always going to be her, and us as viewers needed someone else that, oh, maybe it's not going to be. I just feel like it was just there to as a decoy for us as viewers, so we didn't go through the whole episode going, well, we know that now they've lost, Carla's definitely going.
Yeah, I mean, she would have been definitely on the bottom of my power rankings last episode, going into this episode, and, you know, that, you know, came to fruition. I think that I did say, I'm going to contradict myself now, but I did say that no one should go to the outpost, and I truly believe that for most of these people, but Carla, she could have used the outpost. Like, she probably should have put her hand up to get some sort of idol or advantage, and we know she's so good at making fires. It could have been really good for her.
She had full awareness the whole episode that she was the one on the complete bottom. So why not put your hand up for the outpost when JT goes, oh, I'm going to go unless anyone's going to want to, rock, paper, scissors me for it. That's where she goes, yeah, me.
Mm-hmm.
Because she is on the out. She needs any form of advantage she can possibly get. And when she was at Tribal Council, I don't think it was her fighting for her life at all. Like, saying that you're good at lighting fires because you have a fire pit at home, saying you've camped your whole life, it means nothing to me in the game. I want to hear you do a Philip Shepherd to me and say, if you save me this vote, you own my vote for the rest of the game. I want you to tell me that you're going to be a loyal tribe member. I want you to, you know, throw someone else under the bus to show me that you've got game in you. I don't want you to say, I can help with the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Not great. I agree that That's not the kind of thing that's going to make someone stand up at tribal council, like a live tribal council, start whispering in people's ears, like, Carla's good at fire. We have to change the vote. Yes. Like, that's not exactly going to happen.
Exactly. And I just think some people have it in them. Some people don't have it in them. You know, New Zealand Survivor majority of them haven't seen what idols in play are like. Like, start creating a fake idol and show it to naive, dumb people in your tribe that aren't familiar with Survivor, mm-hmm. so that it starts talking. Tell them that you're going to play it tonight so that they go, okay, we're not going to put votes her way because she's going to play the idol anyway. I don't know. There's just, you can do things, but you've just got to think outside the, I can help us survive.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, I don't feel like it was ever going to be Frankie.
Yeah. So now that we've got through the vote, I want to get into some of these regular features we've got going on RHAP Survivor New Zealand coverage this season. First one is Chismisms, making it a thing. My favorite things that Matt Chisholm does every episode. It's a thing. Chismisms, hashtag it, people. No one hashtag it last week. That really hurt me. It personally hurt me. Anyway, it's fine. So what we can see is that In the Drink is a mainstay.
In
it
the
was
drink.
Even on the previously on, In the Drink.
Yes, an old mate idol. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yep, these are now a part of New Zealand Survivor, like to its very core.
Definitely.
Yeah. And one of my favorite moments of Matt in this episode was his look of just pure and utter glee when he was watching JT manipulate Tessa. Like the smile on his face, he was like, this is everything I've ever wanted.
It is definitely everything we talked about after season one is coming to fruition in front of me by mm-hmm. one person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Matt loves JT. Like, that's
definitely.
For sure.
It was brilliant. I love Matt's, like, natural and genuine excitement for the game. Mm-hmm. You can hear it even in the challenges. I think it was in the reward challenge where they're smashing the tiles to grab keys. Tara's, like, little boy thing that keeps it afloat went slightly off, and he's like, Tara's key is way off track. And I just loved it. I love the enthusiasm, and I think he's doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, and I love this moment as well when he was like a really disappointed father when Chani came to tribal council. And he said to them, Chani, you are in a hole. These are terrible impressions. Do you really think that you can beat Kung Kao? And then they were super positive. They were like, yeah, we definitely think so. And he was like, yeah, they look pretty solid. Like, I don't think so. Like, immediately cut them down.
Oh, yeah, brilliant. If there's one thing I want to see him doing more of is I want to see him trying to create drama and a wedge in tribal council. He knows fully aware what's going on. He's given cues on, you know, where the dynamics are, who's sort of on the outs, what people are doing. I want him to start driving a wedge in between without giving too much away. I know, you know, Jeff's had 36 seasons to master it, mm-hmm. but I just feel like it's at the moment it's too much about, like, tell us how hard Survivor is. Tell us just how much you're struggling. How much do you miss your family? Like, no, we want to get into the nitty gritty of this, and mm-hmm. we want people to start questioning their positions in the game.
Yeah. I mean, it is it's a very fine line to tread, and I know that Jonathan would go a little bit overboard with you guys, and it would kind of annoy me that he would give away, like, the whole Summertale tribe dynamics with you guys weren't giving him anything, and he would just
exactly.
be tying down the tribe.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard, and
think it annoyed you, Shannon?
No, I think I was more annoyed about it than you were. But, no, they haven't had Jeff's, you know, 36 seasons to work on it. I think that they, you know, in their both of their second seasons, are doing and have done a really great job.
Definitely.
But it's just a hard line between not giving away anything. Like, sometimes he'll let them get away with so much, and I'm like, Jeff would just destroy you right now.
That's right. And if I was playing on New Zealand, and it's the exact same way I played in Australia, I'd be asking for forgiveness rather than permission. You'd always see how far you can push that envelope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now we're going to get to the Chizzy, which is an award I'm giving out, you know, named for the amazing Matt Chisholm, giving it out every week. But last week when I gave out my Chizzy for the best player of the week, Henry gave his votes as in 3-2-1. So 3 votes for the best player, 2 votes for the second best player, 1 vote for the third best player, which is how we judge our Aussie rules footballers here in Australia.
Yep.
And I love that. And I was like, I'm definitely feeling that. So thank you, Henry.
Love
so
it.
So what I'm going to do is we're going to have a Chizzy winner every week who gets the most points between me and the guests who are going to give our 3-2-1s. And then at the end, I'm going to add up all the points. I'm going to get the calculator out, and we're going to have who gets like the ultimate Chizzy at the end of the season. So I think it's a great honor. I think some of the people in this cast are really going to be fighting for that Chizzy.
Is the Chizzy going to come to an end at final five or something, because surely the you can't give a 3-2-1 when there's only four players left in the game.
Well, that's such a good point, and I had not thought about it until now. That's pending. That decision is pending, and
yes,
we're working right now on the rules of the game right now on that. Thank you for pointing that out to me live on air. Anyway, let's get to the chizzy.
We should make it the first 28 days of the game, because that's how long I lasted.
Yeah, but I do think that people who play really well and like rack up those chizzy points early and then go, it kind of reminds me how in the Brownlow you'll have a player who played super well and then they get injured halfway through the season,
exactly.
And you're just waiting for people to chase them down. So I think that'll be fun in and of itself.
Okay. How did AK finish third in the chizzy when he's only in half the episodes?
Exactly like that. All right. So I'm going to give my points out like this. I'm giving 1 point to JT. Was a little bit hard on him earlier in the episode, but I did like a lot of what he did. I liked how he was able to manipulate Tessa just from the bat. I didn't like his approach, as I said, but... And I don't love that he's on everyone's radars, but I liked how he came back and told the lie. So I kind of had some strategic whiplash with JT in this episode because I loved a lot of what he did and I really didn't like a lot of what he did, but it was enough for me to give him 1 point. Then we've got 2 points for, I gave it to Josh because I thought he was really like the instigator of that Type 5 alliance. And I liked a lot of what he said about naming the alliance and not putting in numbers because that can alienate people. And I was like, yeah, that's on point. In fact, I was going to give him 3 points, but then I was just so disappointed that he and Brad gave away the tribe dynamics at the challenge and it caused me to yell at my TV. So I docked him down to 2. And so 3 points I'm going to give to Adam. Yes, he hasn't been to tribal yet, but I just think in terms of pure social strategy, I love the way he's playing. I think he's in the best possible position right now in the game from what we've seen. I did think that he put Chani a bit offside when he called them like thin and they were complaining about that. But I think that everyone who was in contention for me to get these votes made some mistakes this week. And I think his was, you know, the least drastic. So I'm giving 3 points to Adam. And I love the social strategy, I think, almost as much as he loves watermelon, but not quite as much.
I don't think anyone loves anything as much as Adam loves watermelon.
Yeah. Definitely not.
Nah,
AK, what are your votes?
I like those. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to give quickly a special mention to Josh. I like what he's done to consolidate that five and not give it a name, but give it an internal name. But I'm going
to
go...
So wait, you gave him a special mention, but he's not even in your points. We're giving points to three people. We still have to give honorable mentions?
I'm giving honorable mention.
Okay. Everyone in the cast gets mentioned.
Yes, I'm going to go through all, what is it, 18?
Yeah.
So here we go. First of all, Joe's. No, all right, one vote goes to Tess. Now, that one vote was either going to JT or Tess. I'm giving it to Tess only because in the big scheme of things, I feel like it has ended up that outpost, the scenario has ended up better for Tess than it has for JT.
Okay, I see it. As much as I bragged on it this episode, I can see it.
Yeah, you got to appreciate the fact that she, as bad as the mattress lie was, she went and told her alliance, she did the correct thing. They were able to get that idol without being seen, even though they've obviously let out that who's got it or, you know. So anyway, Tessa gets the one vote.
Mm-hmm.
Brad gets my two votes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who has the balls to pick up an idol in the middle of a challenge or at a challenge in front of the other tribe and knowing full well that the other tribe will be watching and to be able to do it without being seen, I think deserves some props. So my two goes to Brad. And then I'm, unfortunately, I hate doing what everyone else does, but I'm going 3 to Adam. I just see right now he's proven himself in that, especially that reward challenge. He was super strong in the swim, even though he was throwing up afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
His social game is second to none at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I just see him in a position where he's like in this beautiful spot where he's in the tight alliance, but he can also jump ship and bring Tess with him to go against the boys. So I love Adam's game at the moment. And for this episode only, he's getting my 3.
Okay. Well done to Adam. He's this week's chizzy winner and he just shot up in the rankings for the seasonal chizzy.
Boom. Who's leading it?
I think, oh my God, now you make me do math on the spot. No, I think JT is on 7 because, so last week Henry gave 3 to JT and so did I, and we both gave 2 to Dylan and he gave 1 to Matt and I didn't give my votes because I didn't know that was a thing we were doing then. But then afterwards I went and I was like, I'd probably give 1 to Tara because I thought she had a really good start, even though we didn't see a lot of her in this episode. So yeah, I think that JT is on 7. So he's currently just leading Adam. It's tied at the top.
I feel like they were the 4 sort of standouts in the premiere episode. Mm-hmm. So
umpires got it right.
Umpires have got it right for once.
Yeah.
Always blame the umps.
Mm-hmm. All right. So AK, I have some questions for you from the listeners.
Beautiful.
A lot of people wrote in, wanted to talk about the episode. So let's dive into it. This question I really loved from Kemper Boyd on Twitter said, Dylan and JT are trying to play very similar games. Why do you think they are perceived so differently by their tribes?
Oh, I don't think it's got anything to do with their the fact that their games are similar. I think it's got to the fact with like what tribes they're on, the dynamics of each tribe. So I just see Dylan as having one too many alphas on his side with Brad, Josh, and Matt.
Mm-hmm.
That he's struggling to find that in. They've already got their sort of quirkier other male in Adam,
mm-hmm.
where you look at JT's tribe and he's only realistically got Aaron and Dave.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could throw Liam in that, but as I said, he's a goat. I look at JT being beneficial to those guys where I can't see Dylan being beneficial to the boys in his tribe. So I don't see it as anything they're doing wrong, as more so who they're in the tribe with.
Yeah, I mean, most things in Survivor are so situational. You know, someone could win the season, and if they'd been in a slightly different situation, could be pre-merge. And it's just based on those tribal dynamics. But it is amazing to me that JT and Dylan are in such lockstep without even realizing it. They have such similar confessionals about pretty much anything strategic. I just kind of want them to get to a swap or emerge together and become best friends and fall in love.
Yeah, as I would prefer to see them come together and us get 6 amazing episodes of them running havoc than to see them go against one another and we're getting 1 episode of one of them taking each other down. I think it's similar like with Luke and myself came together and you saw on social everyone wanted us to cause havoc, and unfortunately the numbers weren't in my position to be able to do that.
Yeah, well, last week I was questioning, you know, would Dylan and JT work together or come for each other? But that's when I thought that Dylan and JT were both leading these majority alliances. Now that I know Dylan is in such a bad spot, I'm like, he can't really come for JT. Like, he needs JT.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm not sure the way they think, but I always want to play with, people that know the game, people that are willing to play strategic, and there's no amount of strategic talk that can scare me off. So I really think that if they let go of the fact that they could view each other as threats, they could actually work really well together.
Yeah, I think that's what we're all hoping for.
Definitely.
Mike Bloom says, say AK gets to play again. He gets told pre-season that, a la Matt and Dave, he can pick one of his friends/fellow Survivor players to play with him, but they have to start on opposite tribes. Who does he pick? And AK, that, you know, you don't have to say me. I know that goes without saying.
Well, yes, it would be Mike. but can I choose my mom?
That was me, not Mike. But yeah, Mike.
Oh, okay.
You can be your guy and your girl.
We know it would be you, Shannon.
Yeah,
No, all right. I'll just go contestants off my season because it's what people know. So I would choose for the females, Tessa. You know, Tessa and I were super close in the game. Everything that we talked about on the island, we agreed upon. We saw the game very similar, and we still talk regularly, and we talk a lot about Ghost Island because it's current, and all our viewpoints are exactly the same. So it would definitely be Tessa because she sees the game the same way I do. Mm-hmm. And male-wise, it would be Mark W., the former Special Operations Op, or whatever he called himself.
Mm-hmm.
So going into the game, I wanted to buddy up to the alpha male because I didn't see anyone voting them out until merge. But what actually happened is I scored Lockie on my tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And
that went well.
He's very about himself and not withdrawn at all. He's very in your face and likes to talk about himself, which didn't appeal to me too much.
Mm-hmm.
Where Mark has that softer touch. Mark is... He knows when to be quiet. He's very good at reading social dynamics. And, yeah, I feel like I would have loved to have buddied up to Mark W.
Maybe we'll see that on this current season of Australian Survivor Season 3. Is that not what's happening?
Yes, right. What's actually happened is they told me that I just get to pick everyone that I want on in the game, and they're never going to let me get voted out. So,
amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Marco Polo wants to know, sounds like a fake name, but Marco Polo says, do you love watermelons as much as Adam does?
I don't think anyone could love watermelons as much as Adam does. I'm an ice cream man, and I actually hate watermelon, so no.
How can you hate watermelon?
I don't know. It's boring.
People should be in the middle ground between you and Adam. Like, that's the appropriate amount to love watermelons.
Well, if watermelon tastes like ice cream, I would be in that ground too.
Yeah, and on that question, Matthew Eichel says, if AK were to get a tattoo of an animal with a fruit on its back, what would it be and why?
I would definitely get a chicken for the chicken idol.
That's fair.
And can I get like a magnum put on its back?
The best fruit, magnum.
to be fair, the only fruit I eat is banana cake.
That's not a fruit either. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to me that he loved watermelon so much, and then watermelon was the reward for week two. Like, what an amazing thing. Like, everything was coming up for Adam this episode.
No, that's definitely production. That's him saying his life motto, and in casting, them going like, why watermelon? Him showing the tattoo, them realizing this is a great character development segment coming up, and just putting their fingers and toes crossed that his tribe wins the fruit reward.
So you think that if you get a tattoo of something, that production is likely to give it to you as a reward?
Yeah, like if Tess was to get a tattoo of a mattress.
Mm-hmm, yeah, maybe that's what she did. You're like willing it into the universe. You're putting it in production's mind. Like, now that's, people will question her, like, why do you have this mattress tattoo? But it makes a lot of sense.
For any future Survivor contestants, once you're told you're getting on the island, go out and get tattoos of all the items you'd like to win as a reward.
That's such a merging strategy. I like it a lot. Nick Fishman says, do you see Chani as much as a new Oolong as I do? So basically, are they going to win even one more challenge?
No, I definitely think they will. I think they'll win the next challenge.
Wow, challenge.
No, I think production, when we lost four straight challenges in a row, the production was screaming at us to hurry up and win one. And I just know that production would not want to see this tribe go to three straight tribal councils. So I think they're going to bring forward a challenge that suits that tribe the best in their eyes. While it's still an even playing field, it might be a challenge that has a real complicated puzzle at the end, or something that evens up the playing field. Because if it's just another strength challenge, then we know who's going to tribal council.
Yeah, I'm willing to take the other side of that bet and say I don't see Chani winning another challenge until a swap in a couple of episodes. I think that it'll be like a Matt Singh situation where they just, like, you think because they're the underdogs, they're finally going to get it done, and then they just don't, and then they swap. Like, that's the bet I'm taking.
Well, I think that if they do lose again, they should just vote out their strongest male in Aaron, and then production have no choice but to step in and create a bit of a swap.
Is that true? Is it JT's going to vote out his best ally in Aaron in order to try and, like, trigger production to just change something because it's so, so sad?
Let's do it. Let's just change it up a bit.
What a reason to get voted out. Like, I think Aaron would be pretty upset about that. Yeah. Randy Newpool says, it seems like production has corrected their sound issues with the Tribal Council cave. Did you notice any other adjustments this episode?
On episode one, I was not high on the cave at all, purely for the fact that I think it was like Frankie's audio was like she was in a public toilet. It was just horrific. But as soon as they rectified that this episode with the sharp audio, I was actually digging the cave more. I can't deal with the fact that they're sitting on the right-hand side and the host is on the left. Like, just, oh, I don't know, it's the OCD in me maybe, but sit on the other side like it's always been, and who knows, maybe that's just the way the cave looks best.
If you play on Survivor, it's your right to get to complain about these pedantic little details and production changes in international versions. Okay, last question. Fiona Wall Minami says, who in the cast probably has a Velcro wallet? and who would be most likely to fall for a chicken idol? It's actually two questions, so yeah.
Can it be the same person?
If you want to be really mean, yeah, sure.
Okay. Sorry, Liam, you're definitely the bloke that's rocking up to a pub with a Velcro wallet, ripping it open, paying for a vodka raspberry with exact change and walking off to be sold a chicken idol.
Yeah, do you think Liam would fall for the chicken idol? You think, no way. Liam seems too switched on for that.
I think if I told Liam that I found an idol and it gave me the option to get chickens for the tribe or play it for myself as a muley, he would lap it up every day of the week.
Oh, poor Liam. We've been so mean to him, but you called him a goat. I didn't call him a goat.
And this is what I was saying. This is nothing personal against these guys. It's just what we're watching.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Liam's watching this going, oh my God, I was so naive and wish that I had been smarter.
Yeah, the Liam redemption arc where he just like goes to the end and wins is totally on.
And becomes the best player that Survivor has ever seen.
Yeah, see, it's episode two. It's hard to call your shot. But, yeah, it's not looking great for Liam, got to say. All right, well, that pretty much does it for us today. AK, thank you so, so much for being here to talk about the episode with us. Where can people find you on social media to, follow you and talk to you more about Survivor or just what you're doing in life?
Yeah, I'm back on Instagram now. So follow me at aaron.knight.ak. Or if you really want to support me, I would love it if you could like my Facebook business page, which is just DJAK.
Mm-hmm. And we also need a hashtag for this episode of the podcast. If you made it all the way to the end, you can hashtag this on social media so we can talk about the episode. You can always hashtag know-it-alls, RHAP, but this is specifically for this episode. AK, I've got a couple for you. We've got hashtag blurbutts. Hashtag mattress reward, or a slightly different and probably better, hashtag mattress tattoo.
I'm digging the mattress tattoo. Let's hit that. Yeah. Let's do that. That's brilliant.
Let's do mattress tattoo.
Mattress tattoo.
You guys can find this podcast in the Reality TV or Hap-Ups feed in your podcast app or on Rob Has a Website. Please reach out. Please give me your feedback. I love talking about it with you guys. You can find me on Twitter at Shannon Gaitz, that's SHANNONGAITZ, or talk to me in the Patreon group or in the comments on the website. I've loved talking to everyone about it. I'm having so much fun getting to talk to great people like you, AK, and talk about what's shaping up to be a really, really fun season of Survivor.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and you're doing an amazing job. Congratulations on getting this gig with Rap, and yeah, keep going. Don't be scared to be controversial, and yeah, you'll be fine. And can I just say quickly to the 18 cast of New Zealand, I hope you're enjoying this side of the experience, watching it back. And if you ever want to reach out and have a chat, there's 48 Australians that would honestly welcome you with open arms. So, yeah, scream out if you need anything. And, yeah, all the best for the rest of the season.
Love it. Love that international relationship. Yeah. Definitely reach out to AK. If you're mad about anything I said, you can just reach out to AK on that. That's it for us today, guys. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you to AK, and thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. That's it for us. Bye.
Hey, guys.